Hello, and you are listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM, bringing you alternative and undercovered current affairs from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland.
I'm Max Newman.
I'm Arman Rana.
I'm Ben Nelson.
And I'm Milena Carrasco. It's Thursday, June 27th at 5 o'clock p.m. On today's show, we'll be talking about the removal of Cecil Rhodes from Vancouver's L'École Bilingual Elementary School with Hogan's Alley director, Stephanie Allen.
You'll also be discussing the Vancouver Aquarium and its parent organization, Oceanwise, a recent decision to no longer sue the city of Vancouver and what Vancouverites think of that choice.
And you'll also learn a bit about the aquarium's Romanian dolphin, Helen, and where she's finding a new home.
But first, we'll be discussing some local sports, starting with an update on the Vancouver Whitecaps.
So if you're a regular listener, you might have noticed that we don't really cover sports, and that's because we have a sports collective here at CITR. However, during the summer, our spoken word collectives are on hiatus, meaning we don't have a sports collective right now. But we have a new news collective member, Ben Nelson, who is here in studio with us today. And Ben just finished grade 11 at Lord Byng Secondary and happens to be a big fan of sports and sports reporting. So Ben is going to give us an update on Vancouver's Major League Soccer team, the Whitecaps. Welcome to CITR, Ben.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. I've tried to follow this a little bit, but I'm definitely in the dark on what's happening with the Vancouver Whitecaps, which is Vancouver's Major League Soccer team. I've heard some reports that there's been a sexual assault allegation against maybe a former soccer coach, and that there have been some walkouts of games, but I basically know only that. So would you mind telling me a bit about what's been happening with that story with the Vancouver Whitecaps?
Okay, so a couple of months ago, a blog post written by former women's Whitecaps player Ciara McCormick alleged abuse by a former coach around 2008. He's no longer with the club. Her blog post is titled "A Horrific Canadian Soccer Story, the story no one wants to listen to but everyone needs to hear." These allegations were also backed up by 12 former players from both the women's Whitecaps and Canadian women's U20 teams of 2008.
Okay, so it's an allegation, but it has been backed up by a bunch of former players. Interesting. So what actions have the Whitecaps and their fans taken as a result of these allegations?
On April 4th, the province reported that the Whitecaps had gone to the police about the allegations, and BC Soccer as an organization also launched their own investigation into the matter, but little else was done. As a result, two Whitecaps supporter groups, the Southsiders led by Paul Sabrin Herzog and the Curva Collective, staged protests over four separate games, causing the Whitecaps' average home attendance to dip. Fans from visiting Portland also joined the protest during the Whitecaps game with the Portland Timbers.
Okay, so we're seeing attendance drop as a result of these allegations. And this sort of began on April 4th when the province started this reporting. That was sort of the beginning of this.
That was a big push. That was one of the bigger pushes, yeah.
Okay, interesting. So how did the Whitecaps respond to these protests?
So at first, the Whitecaps owners Greg Kerfoot and Jeff Mallett released an apology for the pain caused by the alleged abuse. But when protests continued, they spoke to McCormick, who was the original writer of the blog post, and three other former players as a result. This caused an end to all of the protests.
Oh, okay. So so the protests are kind of done now?
Yeah, the protests are done now.
Okay. And just to clarify, too, because the Whitecaps, there's both a male and female team, right? So were protests happening at both games, like the female league and the male league, or was it just one of the two? Because it was the female league that has these sexual assault allegations, right?
So the protests were happening at the men's games. Supporters would walk out in the 35th minute 10 minutes before halftime of the game, which is a pretty crucial push in a soccer match for a team, a time to gain momentum.
Right, where you'd want the fans there.
Yeah, so they'd leave and the stadium would look completely empty, and you could see it throughout the stadium on television as well as if you were there.
Right, and so this was sort of an act of solidarity, and also, is it fair to say that there is a larger attendance at the men's games, and thus it was meant to kind of have more effect by having these protests happen at the men's games versus the women's?
Yeah, I believe so.
Right. Well, so how have these protests affected the Whitecaps as an organization? I'm wondering what has come as a result of this.
So the Whitecaps' average attendance has dipped slightly from around 22,000 from last year to around 20,300. In the games involving protests, there were four. The attendance was up to 4,000 spectators below the season's average. Now that the protests are over and the owners are talking with the players, attendance is close to being back to normal.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I wonder, like, how many dollars were lost and, you know, other kind of long-term effects this might have, but that's something we can definitely look into. Thanks for giving us this update. Local sports are important. so it's good to hear. Thanks, Ben, for bringing this to our attention. So we're going to – this is the place where I say a really clever line. We're now turning from the Whitecaps to white supremacy. Armand?
So to put things in context, in 1910, Vancouver School was named after British businessman Cecil Rhodes. Cecil Rhodes was a prime minister of the Cape Colony, which is in modern-day South Africa,
right,
from 1890 to 1896. While the Vancouver School Board Heritage Archives describe him as a British financier and political leader in South Africa, he is well known in Southern Africa for his major role in imperialism and white supremacy in the region. He advanced policies that dehumanized black people, deprived them of their land, and founded a paramilitary private army, the British South African Company's police, resulting in the systemic murder of approximately 60,000 people.
Wow. So on June 19th, at a facilities planning meeting, which had a public hearing component, the Vancouver School Board met, and Trustee Jennifer Reddy's motion, which we've previously covered, which was to have the plaque or tiles, which commemorate Cecil Rhodes by just saying his name, at what is the school that's known today as L'École Bailing. At this meeting, there was heated opposition to the proposed removal of Cecil Rhodes' name from certain alumni of the school, which, again, was previously named Cecil Rhodes. So we're going to take a listen to some of this opposition and then turn to our interview with Stephanie Allen.
It's good to see that people have had discussion with regards to the tile, and it is an archival piece, a mosaic that is one of very few in the city of Vancouver and definitely in the board. It is what we could consider an insurable. My concern in hearing that there's been so many discussions is that the Cecil Rhodes alumni have not been invited to those discussions. Which
there was a quote online. I'm sure you're aware that this has kind of unleashed an online storm of debate. And there was a quote the other night that I want to repeat these words. I, for one, am able to remember my great times at the school without having to associate them with the awful history, more than not a nice dude, in my opinion. I know that you and many others won't agree, but can we not please crap all over everybody for having different opinions? I respect yours, as I hope you respect mine. I think this is a very good basis to go forward on. Respect each other's opinions. And mutual respect is a very, very important concept. But history, as they say, favors the victor. History gets to be written by the conquerors, by the victors. And the question here is, will you guys designate who the victors are, or will you include all of history?
All right. So those were a couple speakers at this public hearing held by the school board or public meeting. You had to register in advance to speak, which is a point of contention we'll get into. But that was on June 19th. And they were discussing, they were speaking against the removal, those two individuals, they were speaking against the removal of the name Cecil Rhodes from L'École Billing. How do you say that name?
L'École Billing. You're
better at it, Armand, than I am.
I'm not a French speaker myself, so.
Well, okay, what do we have next? So, yeah, in the end, do you want to tell us what happened with the vote before we go to our interview with Hogan's Alley director Stephanie Allen?
Yeah, so in the end, this Monday, the Vancouver School Board did vote unanimously to remove the Cecil Rhodes plaque at L'École Billing. However, this came after a really messy process starting in 2017, starting with the reinstallation of the plaque and now the eventual removal. So I reached out, as you said, to the director of Hogan's Alley, Stephanie Allen, to get her thoughts on it.
Okay, cool. And we're going to go to that after just a really quick ad break. So hang in there, guys. We'll be right back with our interview with Stephanie Allen.
Are you a friend of ours who loves to get discounts? Come down to CITR, more deals than you can count. We've partnered with some local businesses. So come down to us to get your card before it's too late.
As a member of CITR Discorder, you get amazing deals with some of Vancouver's finest local businesses, such as Devil Mayware,
Audiopile,
Stormcrow Tavern and Ale House, The Biltmore,
Book about
Warehouse,
the Vancouver School Board's recent decision to remove the name Cecil Rhodes from
the L'École Billing. For more information, visit citr.ca/friends.
Do you mind starting out by telling our listeners who you are and what you do?
Sure.
Did you know UBC students get 20% off organic, farm-fresh produce from the UBC farm? Come by the farm and eat local. Really, really local. Supported by British Columbia's Buy BC program.
Said that people disappoint, but pizza is eternal. That adage is being put to the test with Canadians weighing in on pizza, love, and slice etiquette. 6 in 10 Canadians have some type of relationship deal breaker when it comes to pizza, but 1 in 3 have no pizza love limits at all. The top deal breaker was eating pizza in bed at 18%, and closely behind was anchovies on pizza at 17%. Next up were picks the cheese off at 10, eats pizza with a knife and fork at 8%, uses too much garlic dipping sauce at 7%, puts pineapple on pizza at 6%, doesn't eat the crust at 6%, and eats it cold at 4%. So cuddle up on the couch and share some za and some love.
Hello, and we're back. This is Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. We just took a little ad break, having some trouble with our soundboard here, but I think we're good to go for our interview. So we just heard a couple of folks who spoke at a school board meeting on June 19th. They were alumni of a school that was once known as Cecil Rhodes and now is known as L'École Billing, which is a bilingual school. I'm obviously not bilingual. So we had a couple people speak in opposition, alumni. And then we also had, there was at least one individual who spoke in favor, who was someone from South Africa. But so we were able to reach Hogan's Alley director Stephanie Allen, who does a lot of work around anti-Black racism, ending obviously anti-Black racism. And so she had some very interesting perspectives to give News Collective member Armand about how the process itself of getting this name removed was, It's something to take note of, and it's part of the story. So the story isn't just that the name is being removed. It's the energy it took to have it removed and the pushback that happened. And currently we're also looking into how the name was even put up again, because the name was Cecil Rhodes was taken down when the original school was demolished, and when it was rebuilt, the name was put back up, the tiles, in 2017. So there's a lot of other components to the story. So let's take a listen to what she had to say.
Hi, this is Armand from CITR Radio. Yeah, so can you just hold on a sec while I just get set up for the interview? Thanks. So yeah, thanks for taking the time to speak with us today. As you know, I'd like to talk a bit about the Vancouver School Board's recent decision to remove the name Cecil Rhodes from L'École Bilingue. Do you mind starting out by telling our listeners who you are and what you do?
Sure. My name is Jesse Allen, and I'm a founding director of the Hogan's Alley Society. The Hogan's Alley Society is a not-for-profit organization that is founded to advance the social, cultural, economic well-being of people of African descent here in Vancouver.
Awesome. So let's jump into the recent debate over the removal of the name Cecil Rhodes from the Vancouver School. You tweeted, and I quote, that systemic anti-Black racism persists in government institutions in 2019 in Canada. Could you expand on that and how that manifested itself in the lead-up to Monday's vote on Trustee Jennifer Reddy's motion to remove Cecil Rhodes' symbols from the school?
It's a bit of an answer, right? So systemic anti-Black racism exists in Canada because Canada was a slave-owning nation for 200 years. So while we were a British colony and into the early 1800s, Canada enslaved and held captive people of African descent. That was based and predicated on the social structuring of Black people being less than humans and being our lives being worthy of subjugation. On these lands, of course, that were stolen from Indigenous peoples. And even after slavery ended in the territory known as Canada, Black people went from a condition of enslavement into one of criminality. We were not welcomed in spaces. Our physical presence was objected to. It was all a function of a system that was predicated on our being less. And over time, Canada has not reckoned with this past, has not reckoned with the social ordering of our country in favor of white Europeans, particularly men. And so through time, even with various different governments and even with the enlightenment that you could say socially, where we're starting to realize that these notions are incorrect and are unjust, we still bear the weight of a country founded on principles that subjugated Black lives. There's great resources out there to learn more about that. So when I said that and when I tweeted that, it was a reflection of how we still order society by race, by gender, by class, by immigration status. This is just how our societies are ordered. And it's really unfortunate that government institutions such as school boards have not done the work necessary to, number one, even know the history of Black subjugation on these lands and globally, teach the history fully and completely in the classroom, and be aware of how these colonial references are damaging to the well-being of students of color, and particularly Black students in the instance of the monument that was at the school.
I see. So I want to follow up a bit on one of the points.
Hi, I'm Haley Blay, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM.
The annual Sled Island Music and Arts Festival returns to Calgary from June 19th to 23rd, 2019. Discover over 250 bands, comedy, film, and art in more than 30 venues across the city. This year's festival features guest curator Julian Baker, acclaimed indie pop artist Japanese Breakfast, the incomparable hip-hop stylings of Rap City, experimental noise rapper JPEG Mafia, subversive hip-hop artist Leaf, raspy indie folk favorites Hop Along, anthemic grunge rockers Bully, and over 180 more artists still to be announced. To see the current lineup and to get your festival pass, visit sledisland.com.
It's last call for the moon, so we crawl towards the edges of the light. To stand in your apartment, wait to fill our glasses at the sink. You run the water for a minute over you, fingers pointing downwards at the drain. In that minute, I'm afraid that you might disappear like shadows in light rays. I think this radio is broken, can't find a signal sound. Forgot the letters to the password, I guess I should have wrote it.
All right. Sorry about that strange issue. So we're going to, this is CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Democracy Watch. We're having some tech issues, but we were listening to an interview with Stephanie Allen, the director of Hogan's Alley Society, on the recent removal of the Cecil Rhodes sign from L'École Bieling. And we're going to go back to that right now, starting from roughly where we were. Thanks for bearing with us.
I said that, and when I tweeted that, it was a reflection of how we still order society. By race, by gender, by class, by immigration status. This is just how our societies are ordered. And it's really unfortunate that government institutions such as school boards have not done the work necessary to, number one, even know the history of Black subjugation on these lands and globally, teach the history fully and completely in the classroom, and be aware of how these colonial references are damaging to the well-being of students of color, and particularly Black students in the instance of the monument that was at this school.
I see. So I want to follow up a bit on one of the points you raised, the lack of historical knowledge of Cecil Rhodes and colonialism in general in Vancouver. Played an important role in the board's initial response. One of the arguments that was made by Trustee Alan Wong, and to a less extent, Trustee Lois Chan-Pedley, was that by removing the plaque, we are attempting to erase history, and that could prevent us from learning about our past. What are some ways the school system can do better at educating students about the history of colonialism without glorifying it?
Thank you. I mean, I think what you said is accurate, right? There's a stark difference between teaching history. It's quite another thing to erect a monument with someone's name on it without context, without any explanation. Putting my name on a building in Vancouver is a celebration of me. Let's not confuse what we're doing. If you see the Stephanie Allen building at the corner of 12th and Kingsway, you're going to think Stephanie Allen's an important person. We need to know who that is. What did she do that bestowed upon her this honor? And so when Trustee Wong and others made that argument, it is a common argument made by supporters or people who are wanting to uphold the existing systemic problems around white supremacy and black exclusion. They make those arguments as a way to smokescreen. Now, there's an important working definition of racism in Canada that was coined by scholars a little while ago. And it's important to distinguish the Canadian version of anti-black racism versus the American, where there was legislation that was quite glaring, segregation, Jim Crow. Canadian anti-black racism, by and large, had a few legislative attempts but failed. For example, in 1911, the Wilfrid Laurier cabinet passed an order in council to ban the immigration of black people to Canada. It was overturned, but those kinds of behaviors remained in place in the immigration policies of Canada up until the 50s, where black people were not welcome or dissuaded from coming to Canada. So it's an example of how the systems, these things that are baked in, are masked by not having the overt legislation or the overt name-calling and explicit racial epithets, but are baked into the way we conduct business. So the way that those trustees were talking about honoring history, they seem to forget that places like Germany have figured out how to teach about the Holocaust without having any Adolf Hitler monuments. Germany has put tons of measures in place to recognize the history, to make sure they never repeat it, and to tell the truth about it. Canada has not gotten there with our colonial past.
I see. And how does this situation tie in with the work you're doing for the Hogan's Alley Society, if at all?
Hogan's Alley Society is a newer group, but we have been people who have a collective experience of individual exclusion and isolation. We see our communities continue to suffer here in Vancouver. Our numbers are small, and so we're very interested, and it's part of our mission to work towards alleviating the systemic problems that continue to plague people of African descent here. And we're talking about across the spectrum, the city of Vancouver, parks, school board, all of these layers and levels of government where we have not been considered, our lives have not mattered. Even the Vancouver Police Department, we recently had a meeting with them to discuss how we can work together to support the residents at Nora Hendricks Place, the supportive housing project that we are partnered in with PHS Community Services Society. These are vital issues, and BC and Vancouver has not recognized or even tried to acknowledge the impacts that people of African descent face. So our organization is working towards that among a number of things, and it's why I'm particularly interested in making sure that through my social media or opportunities to engage, that I'm trying to educate and bring awareness to some of these things that most Canadians do not know.
So coming back to the plaque, one of the questions that was raised by yourself and others was, who made the decision in 2017 to install the plaque of Cecil Rhodes? Was there some debate? Why did it happen? What was the process? Did you find out how this came about?
That is a motion I believe Trustee Reddy has made. We would like to understand that, because that's where some of the true systemic work is. The systemic work is you and me and her and him coming together and making a decision, and then that decision having this kind of impact. That's literally what we're talking about. So we want to know how that decision we made. We want to know who allocated budget to it. We want to know why a principal of a school declared openly and unabashedly that they were neutral on this monument. That is a person that is in charge of the well-being and education of students from a variety of races and perspectives. What harm is that principle causing if they don't even know that they need to stand in a certain position about white supremacy? This is shocking, and we should all be terribly troubled that that's what a principal said in an article. The fact that the Tai article came out and the Vancouver School Board wasn't immediately on phones to administrators and leadership in the Vancouver School Board to address it, that it required a motion, is a disgrace.
Indeed, and even prior to that, at the Facilities Planning Committee meeting on June 19th, there were some residents who spoke in favor of keeping the plaque in place. How would you characterize the opposition to removing the plaque?
I would characterize that as white supremacy. I would characterize that as people who, whether they know it or not, are actively upholding the systems of dominance that Europeans have had on these lands for the time since they've been here. And there was a gentleman who spoke who openly said, "We were the conquerors. You do not get to rewrite our history." That is specific white supremacy. And the fact that the committee chair, Wong, let a comment like that go without reprimand, as a matter of fact, reprimanded those of us who had a visceral response to that kind of race discrimination and white supremacist kind of language, we were sanctioned for our reaction. But this individual was supported and consoled when they were feeling fragile about our reaction. And you have the chair of a committee of a school board who did not identify and sanction what bordered on hate.
Can you narrate a bit about what happened exactly with that person's remarks about how they were the original conquerors and what your response was?
This person had an entire PowerPoint, which is quite impressive given the time we all found out about how long we had to apply or speak at the notice that was given. So this individual had a PowerPoint presentation. They spoke about a family member that went to the school. They showed a photograph, ironically, pointing out their relative, and there's a poor little black child, or child of color, at least, that I could see in that photograph. Their well-being, obviously, inconsequential. And they talked about the fact that Cecil Rhodes, this name, is upholding the British Empire. I think he mentioned about, we won the battle, I think was said, and you don't get to pander. He actually told the board chair not to pander. This is explicit.
And what was your response to that?
Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you. What was your response to that? And how did the chair handle that? I'm just trying to understand the dynamic.
So, yeah, there was those of us who were in the gallery were stunned, shocked, appalled, hurt, harmed. And we gasped and we said, "This is ridiculous." And we muttered under our breath. Nobody overturned a table. Nobody threw a chair. This is a visceral reaction and a gasp at this type of rhetoric being spoken openly in 2019 in Vancouver. And so we were appalled. And some people said, "That's racist." And as a matter of fact, as soon as this person heard or felt that they were called racist, they descended into white fragility and said, "I'm being called racist. This isn't fair." This is an individual who is primarily concerned about protecting Cecil Rhodes' name on a monument without wanting to be labeled a racist. I mean, the irony and the layers of fragility and gaslighting is just, I mean, it's staggering. And you have a counselor who presided over that.
And then how did, you said Alan Wong's, trustee Alan Wong, he sanctioned you or didn't, what was his role in that?
What I seem to recall was, he said, that's enough or something. Or he said, there will be no comments from the gallery. And then he actually apologized to the blatant white supremacist. he apologized to him and said, I'm sorry for the disruption.
Oh, I see. Okay. Thanks for fleshing that out. Okay, I've got another question for you. You know, on this point, I'm from South Africa, and, you know, we learned about Cecil Rhodes in school in South Africa. However, there was, you know, I'm surprised that so many people, like that person who came and talked about how the conquerors should not be unconquered or something, how they became aware of Cecil Rhodes. I was just wondering, how would you imagine the opposition would have been different if the plaque was of an even more well-known but still racist figure in settler Canadian history, such as John A. Macdonald or Winston Churchill?
Well, we have some examples, right? Look at what happened in Victoria when the mayor decided to remove the John A. Macdonald monument. People are not happy. There's people who feel like this society is ordered around their existence and privileges and benefits them primarily. And to people who have been very privileged, equity feels like oppression.
I see. And finally, after Reddy's motion passed on Monday, you tweeted that we still have a lot of work to do, and I quote, to center the voices of Black community members in these moments, not administrators or politicians. Can you elaborate on what you meant by that?
I think what happens in these cases is that the story becomes the motion. The story becomes that the council made a decision that was finally good or whatever. The story becomes centered around people that already have quite a lot of a platform and spotlight. And I would argue that the story needs to center around the people most harmed. We actually have to hear from and learn from the people who've been, you know, shouting these things from the rooftop for decades, versus this one motion, this one trustee board. It has to be, I think, much more substantial than that. And I think that's what I was trying to say, because the news media won't necessarily call us. You know, you reached out to me, which is fantastic, but you'd find that, you know, they would not always do that. Many do, and we're grateful for that, but many do not. Many focus in on the administration or the political context. And that's how we continue as media to uphold and reinforce the exclusion. Like, that's whose voice should be centered in this moment. When someone is harmed or when someone is the most impacted, that's whose voice should be centered.
All right. Thanks so much, Stephanie, for taking the time to speak with us today.
My pleasure. I appreciate the call.
Yeah. All right. And also, this is now South Africa. I just want to thank you for the work you're doing.
And we're back. You're listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. You just heard an interview News Collective member Armand Rana did with Stephanie Allen of the Hogan's Alley Society over the removal of the name Cecil Rhodes from L'École Bilingue. Really good. Can't you, Milena? You should say it.
I can't.
You can't? Okay. Well, none of us speak French. Sorry for the technical disruption with that interview. I think we're going to put it up on Seeking Office after. So if you want to catch the full thing uninterrupted, you can find it on our podcast there, Seeking Office. All right. We're going to switch gears. We switched from white caps to white supremacy and now to dolphins. Yeah. We have no clever transition there. So we're going to talk about, I'm just going to set the scene here. So as most of our listeners probably know, the Vancouver Aquarium is no longer suing the Vancouver Park Board. Cool. Yeah.
Yay.
So so that happened. The way that happened is that the Vancouver Aquarium reached a new lease agreement with the Park Board. And so with this new lease agreement, the aquarium will continue to remain in Stanley Park for the next 35 years. So it's a long lease. In the new lease agreement, the organization will keep paying. And the organization that oversees or is the parent company to the Vancouver Aquarium is called Oceanwise. They're going to keep paying their annual licensing fee. And so that kind of will continue as usual. And so the a part of this, the kind of new lease agreement in this post-cetacean world we're in, which is that, which means that the Vancouver Parks Board, as well as the federal government of Canada, have now banned the captivity of cetaceans, so large mammals like whales, dolphins, and porpoises. Those are no longer to be held in captivity unless they're being rescued because they're in danger, which some people take issue with even that. So, but we're moving away in aquariums in most of North America and certainly here in Vancouver from having these large mammals as the main attraction. So as a way to continue to attract visitors, the aquarium is now going to switch to a focus on ocean conservation, as well as incorporating more of the Indigenous nations and their storytelling. So we're really interested to hear what people thought of that. So maybe we'll should we first hear from folks, or should we go to...
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so first we're going to take you right outside the Vancouver Aquarium in Stanley Park.
Yep.
Max, do you want to set the scene for us? Because you headed down there this morning, right?
Yeah, I went out to the Stanley Park and to the aquarium. Yeah, to see what people think about that, like about all the ban happening, and yeah, that there will not be able to see dolphins anymore, mm-hmm. or like the only dolphin we have right now at the aquarium,
the last dolphin,
Helen.
My best friend.
Yeah, we have an expert in the studio.
Yeah,
as well.
We'll be talking about Helen a bit later.
Yeah, but I was just wondering what people are really thinking about that. That yeah, they're changing from like yeah to like showing more about First Nation history and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so, yeah, and it was pretty crowded this morning.
Yeah, yeah, lots of school kids, right? From the photos I saw.
Yeah,
field trips maybe.
Families. Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's take a listen to what people had to say. Here we go.
Organization Oceanwise launched a lawsuit in an attempt to recoup some of the revenues lost after the park board passed a bylaw amendment in 2017. That amendment prevented the aquarium from bringing in any new whales or dolphins. The aquarium said that after the ban, attendance dropped by 13% in the last 2 years. This decline in attendance equates to a loss of approximately $4 million in revenues for each year. I went out to Stanley Park to ask people what they think about the ban and if it is a good idea to focus their programming on ocean conservation and First Nation stories.
I mean, coming to the aquarium because of the dolphins and whales and belugas.
Well, we do like seeing them, but I mean, I know that they have a very hard time in captivity because they usually travel long distances and they can have the teeth grinding problems and all that when they're in captivity. And they say they do more enrichment, it'll be okay, but my thought is if you can keep the natural areas natural and keep them alive in nature is better. As far as coming to the aquarium, we come for a variety of reasons. It's not just the dolphins.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think they only have one dolphin left, actually, right?
I think so, and I think it's one that can't be released because its fin has been clipped off. It was caught in a fishing net, and so it actually can't be released. And I'm fine with that because, of course, what other options are there?
Yeah, right.
But yeah, no, it's an interesting thing to have to think about because, you know, nature isn't as habitable as it used to be. So how do you keep them alive? And sometimes the aquariums seem like the only option.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you so much. Have fun at the aquarium. I was just wondering, what are your thoughts on that? Like, are you coming for the dolphins or like... are you fine with that, or your kids?
I think so.
Never mind.
Yeah, we don't really know.
Yeah.
We don't. We live in Toronto for 70 years, and we have like aquarium in Toronto too.
Yeah.
But I heard this is the biggest one in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So we come here first to see it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you just arrived in Vancouver.
We just got here yesterday.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Enjoy yourself. Have fun at the aquarium.
Thank you.
Bye bye. Bye bye.
This is the way to your aquarium. That's why I'm asking. I think the totem is actually on the other side, right? Yeah, but we can go to this side if you want.
Okay, if you want to
walk. Yeah, sure. I don't know if you heard about. Are you from Vancouver?
Yes.
Have you heard about the that the aquarium was planning on on suing the park board because they are they're banning the whales and dolphins.
Right.
And now they're trying to focus more on like indigenous history and First Nations history and Pacific Rim.
Yep.
I was wondering, what are your thoughts on that? Like,
focus on Pacific Rim?
Yeah, like banning whales and dolphins and now trying to find a different focus, like focus more.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards the aquarium side because they are doing a lot of good things, like educating children and rescuing the animals from the water, right? If they are rescued and they are not in a good condition to be put back into the wild, and think of Vancouver board put the aquarium in a tough position, and where are they gonna leave the animal? It's just gonna die out there. So want some sort of flexibility in between, so give a cream in more ability to do their job.
You mean like by rescuing animals and like keeping them until they able to go elsewhere?
If they are rehabilitated and they can be released to a wild, definitely they can feel free to do so. But if they're not, keep in the tank and they can be live a happy life there. And meanwhile, the criminal can use the opportunity to train the to educate the young kids, right? I have 6 years of myself, and he is amazed about seeing the animals and seeing the dolphins, and that's a great opportunity to see with his own eyes, I think.
Okay, thank you so much.
In my mind, I think that dolphins and whales are like amazing ocean animals who should not be confined to small tanks. You know, I feel like if we do have dolphins and whales on exhibit in an aquarium, that maybe it's like just for a short amount of time. You know, like individual animals, if we take them, maybe we have them for a day or two and then we set them free again. You know, I don't think that animal who is used to ranging over thousands of square miles should be confined to a small tank. I think that is bad for the animal.
Yeah. Do you know how the situation is in the States? Because you're from the States, or you're from San Francisco?
Well, I know that a lot of the marine land and marine world, there's a lot of attractions in the United States are starting to get rid of their whale and dolphin exhibits, and that they're no, you know, when I was young, you could go to like an amusement park and you could see animals like doing shows, like they would have animal shows and the
like orcas, for example.
People were riding on orcas, or people were riding on dolphins, or you know, they would have dolphins like jumping through hoops, or an orca, you know, come out of the water onto the land, and like, you know, people are like interacting with these animals, and it just, I don't know, to me that's just not honoring their existence as, you know, these amazing creatures that really need to live in the ocean. You know, they really should not be like doing a show, you know, or living in a small confined space. So yeah, I'm okay with them not having ocean animals like whales and dolphins. I think it's okay to have like maybe small fish or like, you know, other kinds of creatures in their tanks, but large animals like sharks or whales or dolphins, it doesn't seem right.
Thank you so much.
OceanWise announced it has renewed its lease with the park board, which will allow the aquarium facility to stay in Stanley Park for another 35 years. The new CEO of OceanWise, Lasse Gustafsson, said one of his first decisions was to transfer Helen, the aquarium's Pacific white-sided dolphin, to a new facility. Music by local band Skim Milk. You should check them out on Bandcamp.
And we're back. You're listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. You just heard a piece Max Newman put together today. He went down to Stanley Park and asked people what they thought about the aquarium and its new focus on ocean conservation and indigenous storytelling and its move away from cetaceans and the captivity and performance of whales and dolphins and such. Thank you, Max.
Let's talk to a Helen expert.
Let's talk about Helen, Helen the dolphin. Who's leading this? Max?
Milena.
Me. So,
that's good.
Helen is one of my best friends. After today, we really connected.
Oh my goodness.
I feel like I just like, we have a connection, and so that's why
Helen.
I feel like
that's the sound of a dolphin.
I should tell
yo.
Her story.
Okay, cool.
So, to like start it off, Helen is a Pacific white-sided dolphin who is around 30 years old,
and she's the last dolphin in the Vancouver Aquarium that Max's piece brought up, right?
The last dolphin.
Gotcha.
So yeah, she's around 30 years old and was transported to the Vancouver Aquarium in 2005 after she was caught in a fixed fishing net.
Okay.
Caught entangled, and she got pretty hurt, and they actually had to end up
Sorry, that's not funny at all.
That's not funny at all. Oh my goodness.
Don't say that about my anyways.
Max over here laughing up a storm. Not really.
Anyways, she had to have one of her pectoral fins amputated.
Oh.
And yeah, no, it was really sad. And so the government and the Vancouver Aquarium decided that she wasn't fit for the wild.
Mm-hmm.
So they took her in 2005. And yeah, a little bit about her species is that the Pacific white-sided dolphins are actually extremely social and can be found in super pods in the wild for like with hundreds or even thousands of them at a time. So, as Max mentioned in his piece previously, last year the Vancouver Aquarium made the decision to stop displaying cetaceans, which are like any aquatic mammals. So like everyone mentioned, whales, porpoises, dolphins. And so this decision came shortly after five of these cetaceans died in the past year and a half around 2000.
Cetaceans, right?
Gosh, I can't say that.
Whatever.
Well, you know, those
today's the day where we don't pronounce things right.
Yeah. Last November in 2018, Helen's last companion, Chester, who is, from what I hear, a fake killer whale.
A false killer whale.
Yeah.
Ben, our other expert in the studio here.
Passed last November. And he was, he was one of Helen's last companions and friends, and as I mentioned previously, they're really social animals, so this really made people worried about Helen because she's really alone.
Well, what's going to happen to Helen now?
So now, after the decision today, Helen is going to be transported to Spain, Valencia to be exact, to an aquarium called Oceanographic, which is coincidentally also owned by the Vancouver Aquarium, from what I heard.
But
we can do some more investigating on that later.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's where Helen's going.
Okay. You said the decision today?
Yes. Well, pretty much the Vancouver Aquarium dropped their lawsuit or counter lawsuit against them.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so yesterday, I guess?
Oh, yesterday.
It was on Tuesday, I think.
It was on Tuesday. Yeah. Okay. Just to be precise.
Yes.
No, that's fine. Right, that decision was made on Tuesday.
Yes, and I believe that it was approved by the Federal Board of Oceans and Fisheries.
Oh, okay. They had to approve it.
Yes.
Great.
The decision to move Helen from the Vancouver Aquarium in Vancouver.
Oh, I see. That decision. Yeah.
To Spain.
I see. Okay. Interesting. Well, yeah. And I'm just curious, do you know how they move a whale? Like,
I I don't know. I tried talking.
That's quite a distance.
Yeah, it
like
is.
Like a long, like the most distance.
I know.
You could go.
We were like, this is totally, I'm not an expert, so don't quote me on this. But
yes.
It was maybe like a boat, we were thinking, because you can't like.
Right. You were speaking with your father, who's a marine biologist.
Yes, I was.
Yes.
And
he thought perhaps a boat.
He thought perhaps a boat.
Yeah, I guess they could put her in a tank.
Inside of a boat.
Inside of a boat. Cool life.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good life. Yeah, cool. Well, anything else you want to add about Helen, the Vancouver's last dolphin?
Vancouver's last dolphin. Well, you know, Helen is in our hearts and in her spirit for sure. We're wishing her a very safe flight or journey, I should say, to Spain.
Yeah. That's kind of weird if she's going over the ocean in a tank.
That is strange. Above,
think yeah. about that. Whoa.
I mean,
that's trippy, man. Like, and she's like so close to being free.
I was talking to my dad and I was like asking him what he thought the best situation was. As I mentioned earlier, yeah. I guess the situation is a little bit different, I think, because Helen is like she doesn't have a pectoral fin.
Right, right.
And so if she was like a healthy dolphin, I feel like it would be like much easier to make the decision. Yeah, like free the dolphin.
Yeah.
Free the dolphin. But her transition into the ocean or her ability to be alive
to survive
in
yeah.
the wild
yeah.
is up for debate or
okay.
So he suggested that I mean, honestly, he wanted to just, like, put it out in the wild, to be honest. He was
yeah.
just like, yeah, just put it in the wild.
To be that's honest, that's where I'm at, too. I'm like, yeah. let them die in the wild then.
That's
but
nature.
That's my opinion.
Yeah,
my That's too. Nature. Okay, well, we are almost at 6 o'clock, and up next we have the Spencer Latu Show, so we're going to have to let our dear listeners go. Also, though, before we go, it is Max Newman's last day with the News Collective. If you've enjoyed his German accent and his German stoicism, then you'll be sad because he's going away. Max,
yeah.
you are amazing.
Maybe I'm coming back. I don't know.
Oh!
yeah.
You should, you're going to come back because
yeah.
obviously, why wouldn't you come back?
Yeah.
Well, we all love you and miss you, and we're going to bid you adieu.
Thank you so much.
And wish you
My favorite song.
Oh, this is the song. You know, I walk into the office and he's listening to this and I'm like, turn it down.
No, but
and he's
since 3 months.
Yeah, it's yeah. been a long time. Well, one last time. This one's for you, Max.
Thank you so much, Alex.
Viol
I miss
polka
you.
Folkloric.
All right.
Okay. Thanks for listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm going to transition to our new auto DJ player, which has gone well for me today. Up next is the Spencer Latu Show.